everybody, and welcome to episode 142 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the man who was Bruce Castor's study partner back in law school, Brian. Brian, how goes it this week, sir?
It goes well. It goes great. It goes splendidly. I'm looking forward to another great show.
Okay. Anything in particular that has you excited this week, or you just overall happy that it's a Thursday night?
Well, first off, Thursday night is the day of the week that I most look forward to. I get to sit at this table all by myself and look into those beautiful eyes of yours.
Thank you. It's very romantic. Well, then I guess we have nothing else to do but to get started with Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the Week.
Slasher.
Who's?
Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week. Drink of
and
the week.
Brian, drink what? What are you drinking this week? What do you got?
Ooh. I have got a North Island IPA. Right here on the can, it says it right up front. This is what to expect. Hazy, tropical, juicy. Ooh. Now, oddly, hazy, tropical, and juicy. That's how I would describe my first wife.
Interesting. Might be why she stabbed you.
Fuck, that hurt. Actually, coming from Coronado Brewing Company. This is a New England style IPA, Ron. It's bursting with ripe tropical juiciness. British ale yeast accentuates the hop fruitiness and gives this unfiltered beer a dense, foggy haze like the coastal marine layer swallowing the north side of the island.
Well, that's a great description, almost like it was written for you.
Coming in at...
Sorry.
Really? Really? Already 2 minutes into the podcast and you're already coming at me firing Sorry. Shots.
My bad.
Coming in at 7.5.
Ooh, that for an IPA, that's not too bad. It does look hazy. It does look citrusy. Talk to me about how you like it.
It's good. There's a fruitiness to it, but it's not too hoppy. I find a lot of the IPAs at the tail end, that hoppy aftertaste kind of says to me no likey. But I'm going to tell you something. This works. I am very glad that I have a second one keyed up for later on today. And then for those eagle-eyed viewers who are going to sit there and say, Brian, we know you have a tradition where you do a shot throughout the first 20 minutes of the podcast. Went back to the Crown Royal.
Nice. Broke out the Ron and Brian shot glass available in the web store on ronandbrianpodcast.com. The mug also available through our Teespring store. So much merch.
Shameless.
Tonight, went with an old standby. Went with our good friends at Broken Goblet Brewing. This was one, I can't remember if I've had this on the show or not. This is their oatmeal stout. They canned it on nitro. This is noise reduction, clocking in as a respectable 7.4%. So let's take a sip here.
Whoa. Ron.
The nitro just really gives it a nice creamy flavor to it. Again, not too bitter, as you can somewhat get with stouts. You can taste the oatmeal. Just a solid all-around beer.
Very nice. Mm. Very nice, Ron. Now, my question to you is the general rule that we have for people that really track the podcast. When Ron drinks beers that are 6.5 ABV or higher, mm-hmm. he tends to get saucy during Patreon.
A little saucy, now, a little sloppy.
Is that, do you have only one can keyed up for today? Do you have a second? What will we... what can our Patreon subscribers have to expect when we hit the After Dark episode in an hour and a half?
I've got another can of noise reduction in the beer fridge, so I may have to grab that, continue to lubricate the wheels for Ron and Brian After Dark, which, as you mentioned, is exclusive to our Patreon subscribers. If you want to join the Patreon, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, click become a patron, and bronze level or higher, you get access to the live After Dark episode. That'll begin at 9:30 tonight after this. But in the meantime, we got to focus on this podcast and This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
So fewer stories than last week, Brian, but still horrible because that's just how it
is.
What
I was afraid of.
Each and every week, starting off in Mesa, Arizona, a group of black teenagers flying home from a basketball game were kicked off of an Allegiant Airlines flight for not wearing masks. Problem is, both the teens and the people sitting next to them have said that they were wearing their masks. Four teenagers ages 16 to 17 were on a plane that was bound for Sacramento on Monday. At one point, a flight attendant asked the boys to pull their face masks over their noses, which the teens said they complied with. That didn't stop the airline from calling the Mesa Police Department to have them escort the boys off of the plane. Amy Flanagan, a passenger sitting next to the boys when the incident happened, told a local news station that they weren't doing anything that could be construed as a disruptive refusal to comply. The part that's really disturbing is that the airline didn't even try to accommodate the boys by booking them on another flight, finding them a room, or even calling their parents. Some of the passengers gave the kids money to help them get a room, and eventually their coach, who wasn't on the plane, picked them up and found them a place to stay. They were able to get home Tuesday on another airline.
Okay.
In Fuquay, Varina, North Carolina, not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but the family of 14-year-old Malcolm Ziegler are asking local police for answers after Malcolm was handcuffed and detained while the police investigated a stolen dirt bike that he had purchased. Malcolm had fixed up the bike and was reselling it on Facebook Marketplace. On the afternoon of January 30th, Malcolm, who is black, was in the front yard with a white friend when two Fuquay Riverina police officers pulled up in their cars with lights flashing. Within seconds, Malcolm was cuffed, searched, and placed in the back of a cop car as officers ignored Malcolm's pleas to get his father to retrieve proof that he had paid for the bike. His white friend was also cuffed, but quickly released after telling officers he wasn't involved in the sale. The police department is reviewing the incident, but it's been dragging its feet in releasing the body camera footage as well as the disciplinary record of the officer involved. A little shady when they leave the black kid handcuffed, but they take the white kid's word on it and just kind of let him go.
You got a hard time sitting there and saying that this is not worthy of This Week in Racism.
Exactly. Going down to Miami, Florida, a woman who went viral for an anti-Semitic rant has been identified as a former cop who killed a homeless veteran in a 2015 hit and run. The viral rant reportedly took place after 64-year-old Leslie Sokolov, a retired Miami-Dade Police Department employee, discovered a car parked behind her own at a restaurant in Boca Raton. Sokolov became enraged when the other driver, a 78-year-old man, didn't immediately move his vehicle, and she began screaming obscenities and demanding that he move, quote, "Move your fucking car, you stupid Jew." A maskless Sokolov screams at the elderly man in the video, "Just because you're Jewish and a Democrat doesn't give you the right to stay there." What the viral video didn't capture was the moment Sokolov reportedly rammed her car backwards into the elderly man's SUV, per the arrest report. By the end of the 25-second clip, Sokolov is pounding on the man's car windows as she screams. Her jacket reads Miami-Dade Homicide, which helped people track down her details. While she was booked on a misdemeanor charge of DUI and disorderly intoxication, she likely would have been slapped with a far harsher punishment had she been able to leave. Her blood alcohol level was between 1.151 and 0.157, nearly double Florida's legal driving limit of 0.08. As we mentioned, back in May of 2015, Sokolov struck and killed 69-year-old Vietnam veteran and war hero Richard Flaherty a block from her home. She fled the scene, leaving Flaherty's body to be discovered by joggers the next morning. Sokolov didn't report her involvement in the hit and run until sometime later after seeking advice from a detective co-worker. Detectives discovered blood that matched Flaherty when they searched her vehicle. Despite this, Sokolov received no punishment. Horrible.
Well, you cannot say that there's not a historical trend of police protecting their own.
Very true. Very, very true. In North Ogden, Utah, a decision by Maria Montessori Academy to allow parents to opt students out of Black History Month curriculum after receiving multiple requests to do so ignited a debate over whether parents should have such an option. According to a post made to the school's Facebook page by Director Micah Hirokawa, quote, a few families asked not to participate in instruction related to Black History Month. He declined to disclose how many parents chose not to allow their children to learn about the topic and did not clarify their reason for doing so. Quote, reluctantly, I sent out a letter to our school community explaining that families are allowed to exercise their civil rights to not participate in Black History Month at the school. Hirokawa received a lot of backlash after this Facebook post when their actions went viral, and the school ended up reversing course and saying that they will not allow families to opt out of the curriculum and will handle all future parental concerns on an individual basis. Would you like to guess how many Black students are in this particular private school, Brian?
I'm going to say four.
Close. Three.
Okay.
Not 3%, three. And then lastly, in Escondido, California, a video went viral on Twitter last week showing three white men antagonizing an Hispanic man in a Popeye's parking lot. One of the men, identified as Nick Dunn, tells the man to, quote, go back where you fucking came from, and refers to him as a beanbag, as well as using a homophobic slur towards him. One of the other men, identified as James Bobick, is seen using the N-word repeatedly, as well as calling the man a bean boy. Dunn posted an apology video on YouTube, which was later taken down, saying he's not a racist and is an Eagle Scout that cares about his country. It was also found that Dunn gave an interview to a local news station last month where he said that Joe Biden wasn't the president and, quote, as an American, I don't think I should be forced to wear a mask because this is America, not China. James Bobick and his son Jimmy, who was the third man in the video, have not commented.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is just a very common American attitude. I'm a white American, therefore I should be able to do anything because freedom.
Because America.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course you can.
What is the origin of the bean as a slur towards Hispanics?
I'm not 100% sure.
Because every culture eats beans,
right?
It to some degree or another. Why is this one associated with Hispanics?
We'll have to do some research and find that out. I have a feeling someone will Google it and put it in the comments shortly. But if not, we will research that and check it out. In the meantime, Brian, I know it's your favorite segment and one of mine. Let me get the sound effect queued up here. It is time for Beef of the Week.
And Brian's Beef of the Week.
All right, Brian, what is bothering you this week?
Okay. Hold on.
Okay. Because this is
situated.
It's kind of are you doing the visual or are you just going to talk about it?
Am I doing what?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you were going to do something visual. You were shaking your arms out. You had your hand.
No. I'm getting myself physically centered. I'm getting myself spiritually elevated.
You're finding
I am releasing the toxins out of my body.
Good choice.
All right. So my complaint here is Amazon/ I think myself, and I think I'm going to take some heat on this one.
Possibly.
But it is the biggest complaint I've had all week.
Should I put the Amazon post up on the screen here for you?
Yes, please put it up.
All right.
Now, last weekend, Ron and I and Billy watched the Barstool Sports Rough and Rowdy 13 boxing pay-per-view, which, by the way, we can talk about later. Just a fun time. Can't say that it was, you know, high level of competitive sport, but it was just a fun time. Anywho, one of the boxers comes out in what appeared to be a very dope sweatshirt matching shorts that had the dollar bills all over.
$100 bills.
$100 bills. Now, I had had a few beverages. Would that be safe to say, Ron?
Yeah, that'd be very safe to say.
So we're watching the fight, and the guy comes out wearing this sweatshirt that you're looking at it right here. This is the design. And I sat there, and I was like, you know what, Ron? In honor of the Ron and Brian's angry money bit.
Sorry, I didn't have it queued up.
God damn it!
Sorry, my bad.
In honor of Ron's angry money,
stonks.
What better way to have a visual for this show than for you and I to come out of that bumper wearing these dope hoodies?
Yes.
So I was like, fuck it, I'm buying it.
Amazon, you found it.
I jumped on Amazon and I found it. Look, it's even available for Prime shipping. So I was like, we'll have it for this week's episode. So I said, Ron, what size do you wear? You told me. I said, I wear the same size. So we sent away. I arranged for one to be shipped to your house directly. I arranged for one to be shipped to me. And then we got it in the, then it showed up.
Arrived yesterday.
And this is my beef with Amazon. I feel like this was not made for somebody in a slightly inebriated state to purchase properly. I feel deceived by Amazon.
We should say I got it first and I tried it on and I'm like, It runs a little small. It's a little small. Like the bottom of it literally came to like.
Hold on, while you're talking, I'm gonna go get mine.
And like, so again, I you know, because extra large, you know, can run small, can run big. But it was weird because the sleeves were short and the length was, you know, was not quite, you know, down around my waist. So it was one thing to say, yeah, Brian is holding it up right there. So Brian gets it, tries his on, same exact thing. And then finally, at some point, Brian realizes and Johanna has picked up on that too. Says in many people are picking up on it. Says in black bold letters, kids, girls, teen, for 6 to 16. So Brian completely missed that this was just for boys. But I would,
hold on, Rod, talk for a second. I'm going to try this on just to show you how bad this fits.
Again, you know, it's just in Brian's defense, we all had quite a bit to drink. While watching the Barstool sports event. But, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to defend Brian as best I can, but slide it on if you can. It was very challenging. Like, so there you see, like, it is a belly shirt. If Brian did not have that shirt on underneath it, you would see his belly button piercing. I think as punishment, you should be forced to leave it on all night. Good question from Johanna. Does it have a deep V? You know it can't, or else Brian would be unable to wear it.
So I am right now wearing a extra large boys sweatshirt. You know those when they do those green screen videos,
right,
where the people are wearing like the skin tight clothing? I feel that's what I'm doing.
A little bit. I mean, it's form fitting. I mean, you look stylish. You look very European tonight.
So here's the question. The real question is, from the material, would you say it's worth buying the adult extra large?
I mean, for a $22 sweatshirt, it is of surprisingly good quality, both material and stitching. The fact that I shoved my fat ass into a boy extra large and it did not rip, I think is a testament to the quality of what you have purchased.
I like the design, but Jesus, my beef of the week is Amazon for cheating me.
All right. Right or wrong, it's your beef. That's fine.
What's your beef, Ron?
My beef, I'm going
to... I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I take this off, or do I have to leave it on as punishment?
I think you should leave it on for punishment for a little while.
Damn it.
I know.
The whole episode?
We'll see. We'll see how I feel.
Look, this is literally the length of it.
You're showing a lot of arm. Careful now. Don't turn on our viewers with that much arm. So my beef this week is with my mom's doctor. And Brian, you know the story, but this will be new for our listeners here. So try and make this a short story. But a couple months back, my mother decides to go to her doctor because she is experiencing back pain. So she goes to the doctor. Doctor brings her in, and she's like, "You're just old. It's like it happens. You're 76. You get old, you get back pain." So she leaves. Doesn't give her any treatment. That weekend, she experiences worse back pain. Goes to urgent care. Give her an x-ray. They say to her, "We think you have small pneumonia under your lung, and that is what is causing your back pain." So she goes back to her doctor. Doctor is like, "All right, I'm sure urgent care nailed this one, so I don't need to go any further or double check you. Let me just give you a prescription for pneumonia." So go back and forth over the last, you know, couple of months. Doesn't get any better. Ends up, you know, getting more tests, CAT scan, PET scan, what have you. Fast forward to last week, having to then get 3 biopsies to then find out this week, not just back pain, not just the result of getting older, but cancer of the rib and lung. So now, thankfully, you know, endocrinologist, oncologist, that doctor, who appears to be competent, is comfortable with the fact that he feels it can be treated, does not need to go through surgery. They're going to do it through radiation, through chemotherapy. But to go from going to your doctor and saying, "Doctor, something is wrong with me," and his response being, "You're just old." So we could have been 2 months ahead in this process if the doctor had just done his damn job.
Yep.
And when you see the studies that come out that say women and minorities get different medical treatment from others, that they have a harder time, you know, having doctors believe their stories, listening to you know, the what people are saying is going on in their bodies. I think a worthwhile beef. Can I give a second beef of the week too?
Ron, all things considered, I believe you can give as many beefs of the week as you would like.
It's been a week, and I will say that. It's been a week. And again, to the folks that don't want to mask up, that still want to, you know, not take precautions, you know, to make the week even better, finding out that my brother was diagnosed with COVID last Thursday and is now in the hospital with pneumonia. Now, thankfully, he is responding to antibiotics. His lungs are clearing up. His breathing's getting better. His appetite's getting better. He should be discharged on Sunday. But it's just, I don't know. I'm pissed off at a lot of people this week, Brian.
That's a 1-2 punch. That is a one. That is a most definitely a 1-2 punch.
It looks good that my brother will be fine. And my mom is a fighter. She is the toughest person I know. She had to be raising my brother and I, you know, by herself because we were really obnoxious, pain in the ass kids. And she made me the person that I am today. So I feel very, and she, more importantly, she feels that she's going to beat this.
Right.
The fact that we've got a 2-month delay in starting this process because a doctor is just going to be like, "I don't feel like doing my job. I'm just going to tell you you're old and send you on your way. Tell you to take additional Tylenol at the end of the day." That's my beef, Brian.
Honestly, that's probably the best beef we've had. And when I say best, I mean in the sense of...
It's a legitimate beef.
It's the most legitimate. It's the most legitimate beef. Yeah, absolutely. It's
definitely up there. Did we have any quick, to keep things moving, did we have any quick stock stories that we wanted to talk about?
Yeah.
Stocks.
And I had forgotten about this story when we put it on the list, but it's a pretty horrible story. You know, we were ragging on the app Robinhood a couple weeks back when they were restricting purchases of stocks like GameStop and AMC and other things. But even worse, coming to find out in a story that came out in the past week that there is a 20-year-old man who committed suicide last year after mistakenly believing he owed $730,000 to Robinhood. And now his family is planning to file a wrongful death suit against the stock trading app. He apparently had he was home from college. He was quarantining with his family. He was, you know, starting to dabble with it, and they apparently allowed him to get into options. And at one point, his account made it seem like he was $730,000 in the red and needed to pay over $170,000 in the coming days. Of course, you can't call Robinhood. You can only reach out via email. He just got like an automated response. And the next day, ended up killing himself by stepping out in front of a moving train.
You feel bad.
I feel bad. Yes.
I do not feel bad about this story whatsoever.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Clearly this kid was not cut out to handle, the activity that he was taking on. He did not understand the wagers that he was making. And, when presented with, an error, a technical glitch, the idea was that he did not owe the $700,000 to Robinhood. It was, if he exercised all of his options, he would and purchase all the shares that were the backing financial tool of those options, he would owe $700,000. He did not, because he did not owe on these options. The fact that when presented with I fucked up, his go-to was, I'm just going to go kill myself. He didn't go talk to his parents. This was a 20-year-old kid. Didn't talk to his parents. Didn't wait until he could, you know, speak to somebody at Robinhood. Did not go seek out a banker, a financial advisor, whatnot. But at the very glitch, just jumped in front of a train to kill himself. You know what? The world is a better place because he wasn't cut out for it.
Wow. All right. I did not expect that response.
Now, I have no,
I will say.
And don't get me wrong. I absolutely despise Robinhood for what they've done over the past couple of weeks, but they're not responsible for this kid killing himself.
Okay. I guess the courts will decide that. One thing I will say is, you know, when you set up the Robinhood app, you know, it says, what is your level of, you know, investment knowledge? And if you say you have none, then they'll say, all right, you can't trade options, which is
right,
which is the area this kid was in that caused this problem. But then if you just go back and say, well, I do have a little bit of investment knowledge, they'll be like, oh, well, you're all of a sudden approved to trade options. So, okay. I mean, you don't think there's a little bit of a responsibility of the app to make sure that the information that people are putting in is valid?
Listen, I have been attesting to the fact that I am 98 years old on every website that asks for age verification, and not one has ever said to me, prove that you were actually born in 1923. Not one.
All right.
It is the internet. It's the world that we live in. The fact that this kid took no responsibility for his actions, and the fact that his parents are, instead of saying, we raised somebody that was too weak to live, are sitting there being like, who can we blame? How can we blame somebody? I have no sympathy for this kid or his family. All right. Don't get me wrong. No. That's horseshit. I have sympathy for his parents, but they're pointing fingers at Robin Hood when it should be towards their son. Can I please take this off? This is really all uncomfortable.
Right. You've suffered. It's so enough.
Take it off real quick.
As Billy points out, he wanted to make it known he put some money into all of the stocks that I suggested a few weeks ago and made money on all of them, including the China JoJo drugstore. So good to hear. Thank you, Billy. I will give you one stock pick of the week. It is carlots.com. Trades under LOTZ. This is going to be a long-term hold. I think they dropped down to under $9 today, so you can get them at a discount because it was a rough day in the market. They want to be the next Carvana for used cars. So company structured well, low debt, moving into new markets. So LOTZ, check it out. And also, if you were in the market today, it was definitely brutal. A lot of stocks took a hit. So just very important to understand the risks involved and the money you can lose. Because as I know you, Brian, you had a rough day. I had a rough day, but tomorrow is a new trading day.
I believe I dropped about 2% today.
I was down about 5%, but as always, you got to trust in the stocks.
Stonks.
I'm sorry, you were going to say before I so rudely interrupted you.
The market goes up, the market goes down. I had a bad day in the market today, but I had had 9 consecutive winning days based on your guidance, your recommendations. One bad day, 9 winning days. I'm still up over that period of time. I'm in this for the long haul, the long run. You know me, I have a emotional hole that needs to be filled. If I can't do it myself with my French tickler, then I have to buy something, and I could go on Amazon and buy sweatshirts for boys. Instead, I'm investing in American corporations. I am helping society, the economy. And if I can make some money in the process, it's a beautiful thing.
There you go. You know, now I don't know why this just popped in my head, but I'm envisioning like a Law and Order SVU type situation where a child that like lives in your apartment building goes missing and they discover that you're ordering boys' sweatshirts for some reason. I feel like it could turn out badly.
If it makes you feel any better, I ordered one and had it sent to you. So they're going into your basement to open up every closet door. I hope nothing's locked.
Nice. You know who else had a bad week, Brian? Actress Gina Carano, formerly.
Who is she?
She sounds
familiar.
She was on The Mandalorian. She was Cara Dune on The Mandalorian. She's been in some movies like Fast and the Furious, Deadpool. I don't know what else.
Wasn't she a UFC fighter?
She was a MMA fighter at one point.
That's how I knew her.
She's a conservative. She made, she shared, I should say, some posts about Jews and the Holocaust and everything else. So we made this point last week during This Week in Racism, during Black History Month, how we recommend for teachers not to make kids pretend they're slaves or anything like that. Another area, I think, just don't ever compare anything to the Holocaust. So she was basically comparing the treatment of conservatives in today's day and age to the way the Jews were treated in Nazi Germany.
Right.
Just, you know, certain things you just don't want to make a comparison to because they are very much, obviously, it's a very emotional subject. And she did it and caused a lot of... you know, she hashtag fire Gina Carano trended on Twitter, and Lucas Company came out and said that she wasn't under contract apparently at this point for another season of Mandalorian, nor will she be in the future. So, and apparently, Jon Favreau had gone to bat for her earlier because she had come under fire with some tweets about not wearing masks and voter fraud, and like Jon Favreau like went to bat with the executives at Lucasfilm and said, you know, I'll talk to her, and you know, went to her and said, listen, you know, you almost lost your job, just, you know, think about what you're sharing out there.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like she hadn't had a warning. Like, it wasn't, she had made fun of pronouns previously.
We you know, whether you like it or not, we do live in a day and age where, you know, people are calling it cancel culture. But we live in a day and age where what you post on social media, it follows you. It's not the kind of thing that just disappears. It, you know, you don't type 140 characters on Twitter and then suddenly the world will forget about it. You've gotten into some trouble in the past. Is that correct, Ron?
I'm not quite sure what you're referring to, Brian.
Well, as we were talking about this yesterday into today, I decided to go to pull up your Twitter account and look through some of your old tweets. And some of them, you know, maybe at the time were deemed acceptable, but, you know, it's only a matter of time before cancel culture comes after you, Ron.
I don't recall having my own Twitter account, but if you feel you found anything I need to
answer for,
please let me know.
Here's a tweet that you posted on November 13th, 2014. Putting aside the killing of the Jews, the Nazis did a lot of good for Germany.
That, I mean, if I did say that, I would obviously retract it. But it doesn't sound like something I would say, but I would clearly retract that.
All right, going back a little further, I came across August 10th, 2012. Went over to visit my friend Jeffrey Epstein last night. Does that guy know how to throw a party?
Coincidentally enough, I know someone, not the Jeffrey Epstein, but I know a Jeffrey Epstein.
Do you really?
It's a very common name, and he gets that a lot.
This one, September 1st, 2016. So Colin Kaepernick should get off his knee and play football like a man. I think that is racially insensitive. That is offensive on so many levels.
Don't think that was me, but continue.
Oh, okay. Here's one going back October 14th, 1992.
Wait, so this is a tweet from 1992, just so I'm clear.
Yes.
Okay.
This chick just passed out in my bed. If she doesn't verbally say no, then it's not rape, right? I mean, that's not even funny, Ron.
I really don't think,
what were you, a senior in college back then?
Well, I was hanging out with you at that point. So maybe it's representative of the company I was keeping.
Offensive. But this one I went back to one of your earliest tweets. This one goes back to 1968.
That is going a surprisingly way back.
I know that cultural norms were slightly different back then, but even still, I think you're going to have to explain yourself on this one. Here's the tweet. I'm not saying anything, but if that Martin Luther King doesn't start behaving, someone's going to put a bullet in him, and I won't be too upset. I mean, Ron, that's terrible.
I feel the fact that was 3 years before I was born, I'm thinking that might have been made up. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite made up.
It was in your Twitter account.
And I do want to share this line. I know we were somewhat getting off topic, but in regards to Gina Carano, Billy made the good point. Lucasfilm dropped her almost as quickly as Chris Cyborg did. So good MMA reference there.
Who's Chris Cyborg?
You don't know I thought you followed MMA, Brian. I thought you were a man.
Oh, God, no. I don't follow it whatsoever. I'm uncomfortable watching oily, sweaty guys grappling on the ground, going butts to nuts. It's not a visual that I'm comfortable with. Now, you, on the other hand, as a fan of wrestling for 30 years, I believe you are quite comfortable watching with MMA, watching guys in tight sliding up against each other.
Valid comment. I can't argue with.
All righty.
Well, Brian, as you know, there has been something going on this past week that the entire nation has been watching. They've been turning in on their TVs. They've been going on the internet. They've been just following this so closely. I'm of course referring to the woman who used Gorilla Glue on her hair, Tessica Brown, went extremely viral for recording how she had done her hair, was out of hairspray, and then grabbed a can of Gorilla Glue spray adhesive, and because it said it, you know, it holds in place, used that a few weeks back, and then was somewhat surprised to find out that she could not get the glue out of her hair. You look perplexed.
Why is this news? Why is this a subject that we're even talking about?
And
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's I've seen it on the news. It's all over social media. I believe the last I saw, there was a GoFundMe that had been started for her and had raised $40,000 during a pandemic where people are out of work and are struggling to pay their bills. This woman who puts a fucking industrial adhesive in her hair, instead of being shunned and called out for being stupid, like that jackoff that jumped in front of a train because he didn't understand options, that she somehow is able to get $40,000 from the American public.
Well, it has jumped up. Not only did she get $40,000, but she got a $12,500 procedure for free to get the glue removed from her hair. Now, first, she attempted to wash it out at home. She used some goof off to actually get her ponytail cut off. She went to the emergency room where they used some acetone that was able to loosen it, but they still couldn't get the glue out of her hair. And then it ended up just tightening back up again. But she was flown out to Beverly Hills to meet with plastic surgeon, Dr. Michael Obeng. And he agreed. He said he would do the process for free. It took about 4 hours, and he managed to get it all out.
Why didn't she just cut her hair? No offense. This is the one thing I've not heard anybody point out. Why the fuck didn't she cut her hair?
Because she literally could not, because her hair, you know, it was literally pasted against her head. Like it was to the
point. Oh, it was glued to the skin.
Could not even get clippers or anything, from the scalp. So this doctor basically combined some medical grade adhesive remover, some aloe vera, some olive oil, and a little touch of acetone, and managed to break down the Gorilla Glue and get it out of her hair. And so she will apparently heal up in a couple of months. She was looking at some pretty severe healing time if they had to try and just pick it out of her hair. It was crazy. What aggravated me, and I don't know if it was her idea or if someone brought the idea to her to potentially sue Gorilla Glue, because, you know, for all the warnings they put on the can of spray adhesive, they do not put that you shouldn't apply it to hair.
Fucking
hell. I will say this, yeah. Gorilla Glue is a pretty damn good product. If you put Gorilla Glue on something, odds are it's going to stay stuck together.
Really?
I'm a fan. Now, who is not a fan is Len Martin from Louisiana. He thought that the Gorilla Glue girl might have been lying, and he ended up in the emergency room after he applied the adhesive to his lip. So he was going to try it out to prove that it wasn't as serious as Tessica Brown made it. He glued a Solo cup, a red Solo cup, to his lip, ended up having to go to the emergency room. He initially thought that he could just, you know, push it away with his tongue, but he ended up going to the emergency room and having to have it painfully peeled off of his lip.
Can we send this guy to ISIS?
So
can we fucking send him to ISIS in exchange for one of our hostages?
Just, you know, for future reference, do not apply Gorilla Glue to any part of your body that you don't want to get adhered permanently.
I'm going to apply it on the inside of a fleshlight.
Oof. I mean, we know if you put it in those last 4 inches, you're safe. Sorry.
You know, Ron, that's a low blow. You know I'm never going to touch those 4 inches.
I am, for whatever reason, I'm filling the role of Billy this episode and just beating up on you and roasting you.
Billy's definitely taking it easy on me this week. I appreciate it.
I expect him to bring the heat in After Dark. We'll see.
Better. Well, yeah, I imagine he's a couple drinks.
But in the meantime, obviously the big thing this week is presidential impeachment part de. The Trump impeachment trial has been going on this week. Brian, your thoughts on it?
You're going to have to explain to me the process because I don't know it. Okay, so there's the impeachment managers, which I'm going to refer to as the prosecutors.
Okay.
Because I need things to fit into a dialogue that I'm comfortable with. Then you've got the lawyers representing Trump, which I'll call the defense.
Okay. You're good so far.
So there was the opening arguments. The prosecutors showed a 13-minute video of what it was like at
the shit show at the Capitol.
The Trump speech leading people to go to the Capitol, leading people to break through police lines, going approaching the exterior of the Capitol, breaking into the Capitol, and then literally walking around Congress, the U.S. Capitol, as if it was their living room.
Right.
From what I heard, that Trump's lawyers did a very poor job.
They seemed very unprepared. Bruce Castor, most of all. Bruce Castor, who used to be district attorney here in Montgomery County, where I lived.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
The man who had refused to prosecute Bill Cosby all those years.
Yet somehow I read today that they are, that the trial's done.
I guess you could say the prosecution has rested. So apparently each side gets 16 hours to make their case. So the defense will take over tomorrow. The defense has already indicated that they will not utilize all 16 hours. So I think that's why everybody is assuming that the trial portion will end. Whether there will be a vote tomorrow, I'm not sure, or if that vote will take place on Monday. But yeah, I mean, based on the opening arguments, I would say the less that Trump's lawyers, the fewer hours they take, the better is what it would seem to be. Are you right there with the drinking? You seem to be having
I got thirsty. I wanted to have some water.
Fair enough. But yes, again, odds are he will be acquitted. I mean, when
they don't have the votes, they don't have the votes. They needed what, 17 out of 50 Republican senators to jump sides. And that party is so slavishly in fear of Trump that they're not going to jump.
Well, and 15, I think 14 or 15 Republican senators didn't even show up today.
What?
Did not even show up. So this is, I mean, again, it's frustrating to me. You would hope it would be frustrating to the average American. Like, both sides have a job to do. And, you know, while the Democrats have a case to make, you would hope both the Democrats and the Republicans would go in with the mindset of, I need to listen to this. I need to impartially decide whether he's innocent or guilty. Again, right. Democrat or Republican needs to listen to the evidence and decide. And, you know, you literally had senators being interviewed by Fox while testimony and evidence was being presented.
Yeah.
So, again, the Republicans have not taken this seriously. The Republicans who were put in jeopardy, they showed a video of how Mitt Romney almost ran straight into the group of protesters. And if one of the Capitol Police hadn't turned him around, I mean, can you imagine what that mob would have done if they got a hold of Mitt Romney?
No. We don't know. We have no idea what they would have done.
Right. But seeing what they did to police officers who had done nothing but try and keep them from the Capitol, if they had gotten their hands on a Mitt Romney or a Mike Pence who they felt had, you know, wronged their guy.
Right.
I can't even picture it.
Scary. And because nothing tragic, and obviously the Capitol Police officer dying is tragic. It is not tragic are the four protesters that died.
No, not so much.
Laser balls.
Taser balls.
But taser balls, excuse me. Because of that, it's because it wasn't terrible, because no congressperson died or whatnot, they're not, it's not being treated as dangerous of an act as it actually was.
Right.
You know, had Mitt Romney been taken hostage and killed, Trump may be getting impeached this week.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I can't tell you.
Well, speaking of Congress, we did have our first acting member of Congress die of the coronavirus. Republican Representative Ron Wright, representing the 6th Congressional District in Texas, died this past Sunday after a battle.
Good, COVID good, good, good. I got excited.
Sorry. For the previous 2 weeks, he and his wife have been admitted to Baylor Hospital after contracting COVID. He was a high-risk individual, having been treated for a second bout of stage 4 lung cancer. But again, a guy that argued against masks, argued against social distancing, closing down businesses, and dying of COVID.
Good. Fuck him. Fuck him. I hope he's in hell.
Very possibly. Is the kid who jumped in front of the train in hell, do you think?
No.
Okay.
He didn't know any better, but that's not an excuse to blame somebody else.
Okay. Fair enough. I'll let you go with it. More importantly, Brian, what are you watching?
Ooh, this week I watched an incredibly dull movie called Parker
on Apple TV.
Apple TV.
Yeah.
Starring Justin Timberlake, who almost got canceled this week, and we'll address it shortly when you discuss what you're watching. It tells the story of a rough and tumble parolee getting released from prison in Midwest America, we'll call it.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
They don't really address it. Former college star who, football player, did drugs and committed some crimes. Anywho, moves in with his grandmother. They live in a trailer park. Next door is a couple meth heads who have a son who is on the path to being gender fluid. Is that a politically correct way to describe what the child is?
I would say that would be a good assessment. Yes.
All right. You know what? Every now and then I am capable of impressing myself. So this kid is on the path of being gender fluid. So is absolutely being shunned by classmates, by society, by neighbors and whatnot. And Justin Timberlake bonds with the kid, and they form a friendship that leads to, due to some incidents in their joint lives, where it's really just the two of them on their own in life. Awful. Awful.
I watched this when it came out. Yes, I would agree with it. I mean, the kid was a good actor. I would say the kid was good. But the story was just very, very formulaic, just very much like you knew where the story was going.
Yes.
You know, a few minutes, 15, 20 minutes in, you're like, all right, I see where this is going. And it went exactly where you think it would.
What I thought was odd was during the big dance number when the kid's twirling around, when the Justin Timberlake character approaches the kid from behind and then rips off a part of the kid's shirt to expose the fact that the kid has a nipple ring in the shape of a sun. I thought it was wildly inappropriate. You know, we didn't need to see the kid, topless. It was just wildly inappropriate.
It's 2021, Brian. This is what the people want.
What I felt the problem with that movie was this. It felt like somebody had the idea of, what if we take a redneck and figure out a way to get him to bond with a gender fluid child? Okay, now we have our concept.
That's what your pitch scene right there. Like, that's your elevator pitch.
That's the elevator pitch. So what kind of scenes do we have to tell this story? Well, we need to have the scene where they meet. We need to have the scene where the kid's parents are drug addicts. We need to have the scene where the redneck applies for a job and can't get it, but somebody gives him a break and he shows everybody that he's, you know, doing the right thing. Then there's got to be the bar fight where, you know, his friends are racist, but he shows that, you know, he's not really one. Like, it was every stereotypical scene that was glued together, but it wasn't really telling a story so much as it felt like it was just checking boxes of, well, did we hit this trope? Did we get this, standard? Did we hit that moment? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, great movie.
Can't recommend it. I would not say waste your time on it personally.
Didn't you recommend it to me?
I said watch it because I like when you can share my pain.
There you go.
Was that all you have to say about Parker?
Ron, what are you watching?
I watched the New York Times documentary framing Britney Spears, talking about Britney and the conservatorship that she currently lives under, that her father was maintaining for these past 12 years.
Now, what is the stance that this Britney documentary is taking? Now, so, clearly it's sympathetic to Britney.
Yes, without a doubt. So the stance it takes, I mean, it really takes you back to the beginning of her career, and it takes you to everything that led up to, like, her breakdown in 2007. And then, you know, her father going to court get a conservatorship over her so that he controls all of her personal decisions and all of her financial decisions as well. And so she has been under this conservatorship for all these years. People have been making a lot of money off of her. Her dad, I think, was entitled to like 1.5% of like her residency in Las Vegas. And, you know, what is crazy is, you know, she's been represented by a lawyer and trying to get out from under this conservatorship. And her dad has a lawyer and there's other lawyers involved. But the crazy thing is that Britney's literally paying all these lawyers. Like, her dad's lawyer is paid for by Britney, and her lawyer obviously is paid for by her. One change that did recently get made was they have added a bank onto being able to make these financial decisions for her. But, you know, the argument that a lot of people are making is, you know, if she is able to, you know, do a Las Vegas residency and do an album and do commercials and do all these things, and then you're going to, you know, if she is competent to do all of these things, but then you're going to turn around and say she's not competent enough. Again, it's not even a point of being able to get to the point where she can get out of the conservatorship. She can't even have her choice of lawyers. Like, there was a lawyer that was going to represent her, and the judge said, well, she's not competent enough to choose you as a lawyer. So the argument is, if she can do all this other stuff, you mean to say that she's not competent to choose, you know, a lawyer to try and get her out of this situation.
Right.
And they also go into the paparazzi. They interview this paparazzi guy who is a complete piece of shit and was one of these guys that just followed her all around. And he was like, and they're like, even towards the end of it, they're like, well, you know, didn't she ever feel an obligation to maybe leave her alone? And he was like, no, she always loved it. she didn't like it, she would have said something. And they were like, well, what about the time she literally said, leave me alone?
Right.
Oh, well, she would say, leave me alone for the day. But then she definitely, so just you really see, you know, how the paparazzi and the magazines fed off of her issues and her mental illness. And yeah, and as you mentioned, Justin Timberlake, you know, was talked about in the fact that when they broke up, like he really engineered it as, you know, her cheating on him, her being the reason they broke up. Right. But then him also going on radio shows and talking about how he took her virginity and all this other stuff. So it was, you know, it was very interesting to see. And the interviews that she was doing with like Diane Sawyer and others, like, were very antagonistic towards her and pro Justin. So it really put an interesting spin on things.
Cry me a river.
Exactly.
So I saw Justin Timberlake in concert.
I've seen him in concert as well. He is a quadruple threat.
I saw him with Jay-Z at Yankee Stadium. When the hell did you see him?
I saw him just on one of his regular tours, just by himself.
Ew.
The wife's a fan, so I had to take her.
Of course, wife's a fan.
But I am bummed that I would have liked to have seen the concert with Jay-Z. I heard that was amazing.
It was, you know what, I will say this. It was, the songs they did together were good, but it definitely felt like it was two different concerts that were going on. Because, like, Justin would come out and do a couple songs, and he'd leave, and Jay-Z would come out and do a couple songs, then Justin would come back, then they'd do a song together, and then, but the music was just so different in the sense [S2] Right. [S1] That for me, it was that it would be like Justin would come out and he'd do four songs that I could care less. I was uninterested in it. Then Jay-Z would come on and I'd be like, oh yes, Diamond Hands, you know? And then it was, and then he would leave and then it would be like more, I could care less. It was, it felt like two worlds colliding. And you know how I feel about that.
I know. You're not a fan. Not a fan. A bunch of celebrity obituaries. So maybe we can run through them real quick. Starting off, Christopher Plummer, legendary actor of stage and screen, probably best known for The Sound of Music, passing away at the age of 91.
The hills are alive with the sound of music.
A man that shook up the standings in the Ron and Brian Death Pool, Leon Spinks. The man that once upset Muhammad Ali for the world championship, passing away at the age of 67 from bladder and other cancers. I know you were upset that you missed that one.
Some of them just felt, first off, I mean, let's be real. It is now February 11th that we are recording this episode, and I still have 0 points. True. So some of these people that are dying feel fucking obvious, and I should have had them.
There you go. Former Secretary of State George Shultz, who I was not aware was still alive, no longer dead at the age of 100. Again, no one would have picked him. That would have been no points.
Correct.
Motown legend and co-founder of the Supremes, Mary Wilson, dying at age 76. This was a sad one. NFL coaching legend Marty Schottenheimer dying at 77. He had battled Alzheimer's for a number of years. Former coach of the Redskins, former coach of, I think, the Bengals, the Chiefs. Yeah. Seemed like an all-around good guy, passing away at 77.
Why do you say he was a good guy?
He always struck you like very soft-spoken, wasn't a yeller, wasn't like, never seemed like a prick.
And do you think maybe that's why he died with 0 rings?
Possibly. Maybe didn't have that killer instinct.
Nice guys don't win, Ron. Nice guys don't win.
One of the people that we look up to here at the podcast, Hustler founder Larry Flint, dead at the age of 78. So shockingly, three people had him in the death pool last year. No one had him this year. 22 points left on the table. And finally, earlier today, finding out jazz legend Chick Corea passing away at the age of 79.
Yeah, that one hurts. That one hurts because I did not know who Chick Corea is. I had to look it up. I did not put it on the Google Doc because I did not think it was worthy of it. And then I noticed as we were jumping on the show today that you added it.
Yes.
Who was Chick Corea?
He was a jazz pianist. That much I can tell you. Multi-Grammy award-winning musician. That's about it.
Why is it that I thought Chuck Mangione when I saw Chick Corea?
I don't know. Chuck Mangione played trumpet, so I don't know. And also, obviously, the Super Bowl this past Sunday. And congratulations going out to Billy winning the Super Bowl betting pool. Congrats coming in with 16 points. If I may pat myself on my back, I came in tied for second with 14. And Brian coming in tied for last with 8. It seemed like you were perfect all season and you picked the money line correctly. But it's the prop bets that have always seemed to be your Achilles heel. And that showed itself again. But congrats to Billy. A great run. $50 going in Billy's pocket for winning the Ron and Brian Super Bowl betting pool.
Yes. And by the way, fictitious money. This isn't real money. We don't want Billy to have to report that to the IRS as taxable income. So Billy won $50 from Ron and I.
He won, he won both of our $100 sweatshirts, size boys, extra large. Maybe, you know, we might both have to put these on for the After Dark, I think. Because it looks even more ridiculous on me than it does you. But we'll see. We'll see if I can squeeze into that.
Ron, how on earth did we both fit into a boy's extra large? But what I loved so funny is the fact that you tried yours on. You sent a photo being like, this thing is really tight. and I sat there and like, those, and I literally, you could say xenophobic, you know, the Wuhan flu. I literally was like, those fucking Chinese, what they call an extra large is not an American extra large. They fucked me. I came home, I put it on. It was ridiculously small. It wasn't until earlier today when I was preparing for the podcast and I was pulling up the link so that I could have my beef of the week that I suddenly read the title that said boys for teens.
I have nothing to say to that. I mean, honest mistake. You will rebound from this. You will be smarter for it. Teachable moment.
Teachable moment.
Teachable moment.
Where did that line come from? Did that start with that Steve Carell movie, or was had it been around before?
It had been around before, but I mean, I think, you know, that movie really emphasized how much of a joke the phrase has become.
Teachable moment. Teachable moment.
Teachable moment.
Teachable moment.
Anything else for this week's podcast before we hop off and we start?
I think we should do two things. We should promote the merch store.
Okay.
And I think we should promote Patreon.
All right. Well, first, to promote the merch, if you go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, you will see our web store there. We also have additional items on our Facebook page that you can get through Teespring. Also, if you have our app, which is available on the Google Store, there is a section on the app where you can purchase some merchandise as well. Brian, talk to me about the Patreon.
All right. So the idea is this: we have figured out a way for our super fans, for the friends and family of the Ron and Brian podcast, for the people who appreciate this show and want to show it. Now, back in the day, we would have put out a hat. We would have sat there and shared a PayPal link. We would have sent out a Cash App link. We would have sent out a Venmo link and said, send us money. No, that is not what we are about. We are about sitting there saying to you, help us help the show. So what we've done is we've got a Patreon website where every week after we do this podcast for free, we go behind the paywall on Patreon, do a live, sometimes it's 30 minutes, sometimes 45, sometimes depending on how drunk Ron gets, we go for a full hour. The idea is that we do bonus material. We call it After Dark. It's where we kind of save some of the more salacious news bits where we're not talking about stonks.
Not stonks. No, we would never talk about stonks.
Stonks.
For example, was it 2 weeks ago? I did an in-depth product review of a legitimate fleshlight.
You did,
You know, I didn't demonstrate it, the use of it, but it got somewhat graphic. But there's different, you know, pay tiers depending on what you are comfortable with. You know, we've got a bronze package, we've got aluminum, we've got silver, we've got gold, platinum, diamond, you know, all the different levels starting off of as little as $5 a month, the price of a Starbucks cup of coffee. Should I just shut the fuck up now?
Well, I was about to say, the more Patreon subscribers we get, the shorter Brian's talk-ups about Patreon will get. It's all on you people.
Fuck you.
That wasn't me. That was Billy who made a comment in the YouTube.
You laughed. You thought it was funny. I could tell when you laugh out of nowhere that somebody's made a good comment.
Well, anyway, RonandBrianPodcast.com, web store, link to the Patreon. You can join us for After Dark, which we will be on in about 19 minutes. Oh,
and once a month, the last Thursday of every month, we do what we like to call the After Dark Pajama Party, where our Patreons come on the show with us. It's like an episode of the Brady Bunch minus the incest. We sit there, we talk, we gab, we drink. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Sounds good. Well, we are going to go get ready for that. Anything else this week, Brian?
Absolutely not. It was a pleasure living on this planet this past week. Enjoy yourselves. Love each other. Love yourself. Rise out of poverty.
There you go. We'll catch you all next week.